Hello, and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Heil Russell.
And I'm Cameron Regal.
And, Cam, it's nice to have you back. Welcome to Season 12 of The Conversation. As I said on our season premiere, we are doing two episodes a week throughout the entirety of March, because we've got a lot to discuss, believe it or not. I realize people on the outside looking in, they're like, DK Vine's The Conversation podcast has a lot to discuss. Is this the same Kong that's Donkey Kong, the guy who hasn't had a new standalone game in 10 years? You have a lot to talk about? We do. We do actually have quite a bit of chat to parse.
What's a Donkey Kong?
Yeah. You know, Donkey Kong's only really relevant about half the time on this podcast anyway. Pay attention. It's a wild time to be a Rare fan, a fan of Rare, which we at DK Vine are. I mean, the Donkey Kong is kind of the catch-all umbrella term we use to get people through the door, but the truth is, it's about the Donkey Kong universe, and much of the Donkey Kong universe relates to the studio that conceived it. It's their shared universe, effectively, Rare. And, you know, being a fan of Rare has its ups and downs throughout the years, for sure. But this is a really unique time to be a fan of Rare. And I don't know if many people really appreciate the magnitude of what's transpiring right now. Because for the first time since the early 1990s, before Donkey Kong Country, even, you can say that despite their ownership by Microsoft and their esteemed role as part of Xbox Studios, the studio Rare is now truly a multi-platform studio. Now, what that means and what it potentially means for the future of the DKU will be our subject on today's episode. But before we get to it, I do have to plug a few quick things. Now, Blue Sky, the Twitter alternative that launched in like a private invite only beta last year, is now open to the public. And DK Vine, we have been on there since the middle of last year. And now that it's open for the public, we would really like to grow our feed, our follower base on Blue Sky. And to do that, we're running a giveaway right now. It's called the Eyes of March Blue Sky Giveaway. So if you go to our Blue Sky account, and you can find that by going to Blue Sky, either on the web or on the app, or just typing in dkvine.com/Blue Sky. It'll take you to our account. You can search for us on Blue Sky. And you can't pin anything to Blue Sky yet, so it'll always be floating near the top of our feed this month. But I've got a Blue Sky post that is this contest, and I'm giving away two of Fangamer's now long-retired Banjo-Kazooie Eyes pins. Hence the punny giveaway name, The Eyes of March. We want to get more eyes on our Blue Sky account, and I figure the best way to do it is good old-fashioned Twitter-style giveaway. So to enter, simply follow DK Vine on Blue Sky and repost, i.e. retweet, the post, i.e. tweet, of the contest. We will draw the two winning accounts at the very end of March. And these are just googly eye style pins with the Banjo-Kazooie branding that Fangamer sold a while back. I hoarded a couple of them for this purpose. And originally it was going to be a Twitter giveaway. Then Twitter became a dumpster fire. So I was like, well, I'll give them away with our Mastodon and Hive accounts. But then both Mastodon and Hive, in addition to not really taking off, they also just had a lot of prolonged downtime right after I started the contest. So I kind of nixed the contest there, and I was like, all right, we'll just save this for later. And now that Blue Sky is a reliable alternative, hey, I'm finally doing it. So be sure to enter that if you would like to either win these or, you know, just follow us. Just follow us because it's the same content you get elsewhere on social media from DK Vine, just in a safer, more warmer environment. So, yeah, the Eyes of March. And also, really quickly, want to plug our TeePublic shop at dkvine.com/merchandise. We do have a lot of new shirts since the conversation was last on the air at the end of 2023. We have got the Dino Domain shirt, which was designed, well, the idea of which came from Jeff Onan. And so he now gets some royalties beyond just the Miserable Grapes shirt. So support Jeff, everyone. And we've also got the new Fab Fur band style shirts with Donkey and Diddy and Dixie and Kitty's name on it. So check those out. dkvine.com/merchandise or just find us on TeePublic. Finally, as I said on our last episode, we have got our YouTube monetization restored. DK Vine is now a YouTube partner once again. So do us a solid. Do DK Vine a solid. Subscribe on YouTube. You can listen to every episode of The Conversation on YouTube, but you can also watch our exclusive videos, like the brand new DKU Lore Tour series, where I go in inane deep dives on the twisting continuity of Rare's shared universe and how it all connects, whether they intended to or not. DKVine.com/YouTube or YouTube.com/DKVine. We finally get paid. All right. So anyway, Cameron, let's get to the topic at hand. February 21st, just a couple of weeks ago, it was a banner day for Rare news. And it came in a flurry when I don't think a lot of people were expecting it to be a news-heavy day. It's not like they weren't expecting some news about Rare soon, because up until that point, I would say it was like late January into early to mid February, there had been a cacophony of escalating rumors and unwarranted freakouts about the future of the Xbox brand. It seems like it's memory hold now. It seems like a distant bad dream. But people were tearing their hair out, no matter where it existed on their body. It was kind of maddening to be witness to it all. It started when outlets began reporting the very real, but half legitimate news that Sea of Thieves was potentially going to be taken multi-platform by Microsoft. And the incorrect bit of this leak also roped in Nintendo Switch. Like, oh, Sea of Thieves is coming to both PlayStation 5 and Nintendo Switch. Which, anyone who has ever played both a Nintendo Switch and Sea of Thieves will know that that would be impossible, at the very least on the current iteration of the Switch. Because Sea of Thieves is barely playable these days on the Xbox One, the original hardware it launched on. You know, textures don't load, islands won't load in unless you're already trying to, you know, climb on them, and then it's just a blurry nightmare right out of the PS1. Like, in a way, you could say that Sea of Thieves was already on a PlayStation if you play it on the Xbox One, which I was doing up until like late last year.
Yeah, it's only got rougher and rougher on base Xbox One over time, and like, I could see people thinking, like, well, they could just make a version optimized for Switch, but Sea of Thieves is a game that updates all the time, and I don't think they're going to optimize it for Switch with every single update.
No, and it's also cross-play, so once you begin optimizing it for different hardware, what concessions are being made, and is it still the same game?
Like, a way I could see it working would be to do it, like, have it, like, cloud-based, basically streaming on Switch, but there have been a lot of games that have been like using that as a solution on Switch, and it never is received well ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, unless there was a dedicated, like, Game Pass app for Switch, which would have been the bigger breaking news if that was the case, mm-hmm. I couldn't see them doing it.
And even then, I couldn't imagine it running on a Switch without your Switch just catching on fire, blowing up in your face. I don't see how it would be feasible, because, again, Sea of Thieves has added so much, it's evolved so much in the 6 years since launch, that it would... Like, it's not even really playable on its original hardware. I was trying up until late last year, but it was a miserable experience. And anyway, the rumors started getting out there, and this, like, also included the games Hi-Fi Rush and Grounded and Pentiment. And from there, it quickly became a game of telephone. It became a game of one-upsmanship, of escalating rumors, and utter nonsense. So, within the week of this getting out there, people were convinced the game Starfield was going multi-platform. And then it turned into Xbox abandoning the console market entirely after the current generation. And then it turned into Xbox abandoning the console market immediately, like ceasing production on Xbox Series X and S. Like, people were setting themselves on fire, sending death threats to various parties, such as Xbox Games Studios. And then you had the usual shit eaters on social media, like, they began trying to politicize it with their own various campaigns and conspiracy theories, and, you know, fuck them, of course, but, you know, because they got to turn something that's already getting unbelievably stupid into fuel for their fucking hate mongering. So I'm not even going to give them the time of day, but it's just, it was a very, I would say, innocuous rumor that then turned into this silly season when it came to online video game discourse. And I realize most days are silly season for online video game discourse, but jeez. Because here's the thing. I don't want to say that we're well connected to DK Vine. We do have sources throughout the industry, but we didn't need any sources for any of this, when you can utilize the best resource one can muster, common sense. Because what we do have, and I'm not, you know, I'm not saying we have common sense all the time, Cameron, because I'm not using common sense when I try to headcanon away Donkey Kong's actions in Mario versus Donkey Kong, for example. But when you look at Xbox and what they've done over the past couple of years, where they've already invested so much money, something like $70 billion in a very short amount of time, buying up what seems like half the industry, to say that they are going to immediately abandon the console market, I feel is a ludicrous proposition. And so I don't know. During that time, I felt like one of the last sane people or last people unaffected by like the extraterrestrial force in a Body Snatchers movie. I was just like, what is everyone talking about? Where is this coming from? I'm not trying to like talk myself up or anything. I was just legitimately befuddled at the discourse during this time.
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend I can't see a future where Xbox exits the console market, but it wouldn't be overnight.
Yes.
Secretly shutting everything down in the middle of the night and packing things up in boxes. That's not how this works.
Yeah. And look, just to clarify, I'm not taking a stance because I'm pro Xbox or anything. Aside from loving Rare and Playtonic and rooting for anyone who's willing to make a good Donkey Kong game, I'm not pro anybody. Necessarily. I'm not a console fanboy. I was a Nintendo kid growing up. Then I fell in love with Rare, and then Rare was bought by Microsoft in 2002. And then, you know, I've owned every Xbox console since then because of Rare. But if Rare had been making exclusive games for the PlayStation, I mean, yeah, I'd have a PlayStation. And,
yeah,
you know, it's one of those things where, like, I have no skin in the game, really. Like, it's... In fact, like, Microsoft recently laid off nearly 2,000 employees, which probably helped fuel some of the rumors, although the entire video game industry has been laying off employees, regrettably, this year. So, you know, I'm like, wow, you know, you're on my shit list now, Xbox Studios, because I don't care. Like, don't be laying off employees. That's just, I hate that kind of, like... Oh, we got to make the numbers look good for the next quarter. Oh, investors. Oh, so these are people's lives, the people's careers. Don't screw around with that. If you have the money to be buying all these studios, you have the money to be keeping people on payroll. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, it's a miserable time to work, or rather not be working in the video game industry right now.
Just to have empathy for people in the video game industry, you know, I loathe what's happening right now. I mean, I'm just somebody who's very tangentially in the industry because I have a very, very, very small potatoes Donkey Kong website that I'm earning a living on somehow. But, you know, it still pains me when I see these mass layoffs. I want there to be more opportunity for people. And, you know, it's just, yeah, I don't need to get into it anymore, but it's one of those things where I can't white knight Xbox right now because their hands are just as dirty as everyone else's. But that being said, you know, I do buy the Nintendo consoles because of Donkey Kong. I really want a Steam Deck. Maybe I'll be getting a PlayStation 5 soon. But, you know, if Xbox did decide to exit the console game and release all of their games on PlayStation or Nintendo consoles, then the only thing it would really discourage me about would be the fact that I actually really like my Xbox Series X as a game machine and as a home entertainment console. I think the controller is terrific. It's goddamn sexy. It's sleek. Like, I'm really fond of it.
Yeah, I it's, like, really hard to not come off like I'm just being a sycophant, but I do, like, I own a Switch, a PS5, and an Xbox Series X, and, like, God, I you can hear me stumbling over the name. Like, that's one thing I definitely won't white knight here.
No.
That name is just awful.
No,
absolutely
it is.
Awful.
It is.
But like, yeah, as a piece of like gaming hardware, like I've spent the most time with it. It has like the largest like back catalog that just from years of me being invested in Rare and picking up side games along the way. Of the three, I like its controller the best. Names of two buttons notwithstanding.
Yeah.
And I, you know, it's just a featureless, like black rectangle, but I kind of like that better than the PS5 looking like this giant, like spaceship instrument. I don't really know, but,
yeah, it's what the Greys use to probe you, obviously.
But like at the end of the day, like I'm not going to pretend that I own an Xbox for some affinity for Microsoft. It's because it had Rare games and I wanted Rare games.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like all of us DK Vine staff were there in our, this is speaking of how darn long ago this was, our Skype chat following the E3 reveal of Rare Replay, where like three of us that day bought Xboxes.
Yeah, I remember, because, you know, that was the first E3 I was in attendance for, and I was in the auditorium when they announced that, and I remember checking in with all of you, like, just in the Skype chat, because we still use Skype back then, because we're Microsoft sycophants, baby, and you know, I was shocked because, you know, Jeff had been staunchly anti-Xbox for as long as he had been on staff, and all of a sudden he was just like, yeah, get in an Xbox. And I'm like, wow, they got Jeff. They got Jeff, everyone.
Yeah, and like I say three of us bought Xboxes. That's a little bit of an exaggeration. Matt definitely did buy an Xbox that day.
Yeah, yeah.
The rest of us were like, I'm going to get an Xbox and for this.
And you did, yeah. But yeah, that's just to say, like, I'm not saying all of this, like, of course people were exaggerating the circumstances because I'm pro Xbox. I'm not. I just don't like silliness. I just don't like people using hyperbole in any situation. So it just shows how easily misinformation can get carried away in the increasingly inaccurately termed information age. You know, we have all of human knowledge at our fingertips, and somehow we know even less than we did before dial-up. So anyway, all that being said, I couldn't wait until this nonsense was passed, and it was all tempered 6 days before February 21st, when in a relatively low-key affair on the official Xbox podcast, which apparently is a thing, I don't know. See, that's how little I care about Xbox as a brand outside of Rare. I didn't know there was an official Xbox podcast.
I mean, like, we can attest from E3 2019 that, like, look, I follow Sea of Thieves news. I will watch Xbox presentations. If people from Xbox just, like, sit around and talk, I will fall asleep. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I don't care. I met Phil Spencer once, and I told him, I was like, look, I got an Xbox because of Rare, but I like what you're doing with it since you took over, so that's cool. I should have told him, you know, make sure you don't lay off 2,000 people. Anyway, so on the official Xbox podcast, which I did watch because I was just like, all right, let's do this. Xbox committed to their long-term console plans while also saying that, as of now, four older community-driven games would be taken multi-platform. And they didn't divulge which games they were at the time. This was more damage control because the rumors and outrageousness just got out from underneath them. They didn't say which ones they were. They didn't say Sea of Thieves, but I think it was pretty clear to everyone, given the context, that Sea of Thieves was going to be among them. The leaks and rumors notwithstanding, it just seemed like an obvious, yes, it's got to be Sea of Thieves, right? And here's the thing, Cam, and correct me if I'm speaking out of turn here, but I feel like this whole situation, it's one of those weird times where it's the diehard Rare fans, or maybe just the Xbox gamers who aren't about the big AAA titles exclusively. I feel like we were all kind of dialed into Xbox plans, into their wavelength, years before these rumors leaked, years before the mainstream gaming scene, like, figured it out and lost their collective minds about it. Because diehard Rare fans, specifically of the DKU ilk, and we're probably some of the only Xbox consumers who actively wanted Xbox Studios to work with other consoles due to so much of Rare's own history being tied up with Nintendo. So we're always looking for signs of collaboration, of partnership between Xbox and Nintendo. And guess what? They've been working with Nintendo for much of the last decade. Like, the back and forth that helped see Rare Replay get released, that got Banjo and Kazooie into Super Smash Bros. Ultimate, that brought us every Rare game released on Nintendo Switch Online up until the point of this story, which was Banjo Kazooie, GoldenEye 007. We also got GoldenEye on Xbox, Jet Force Gemini, and, you know, hell, even the DKC games to a certain extent need a little bit of collaboration, given that I think there's always a few things in there that probably need cleared from Xbox, from Rare, to get on new Nintendo hardware. Now, I'm no Big City lawyer. I don't know the fine details of it, but I believe that's the case. Now, we've been hearing scuttlebutt and following the rumors of Xbox toying with offering Game Pass on other consoles. Like, how long have we been hearing those rumors now? It feels like it's been a year since it broke out again, but I feel like it's been going back longer.
I feel like it's almost as long as Game Pass has, like, really existed, or at least as long as xCloud has existed as a concept.
Yeah.
Because it is just... because the whole premise of... what do they even call it now? They don't call it xCloud anymore.
I don't care about Xbox outside Rare, Cameron.
Xbox Cloud Gaming, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like when they were, again, I'm going back to E3, when they were showing it off at E3, the way that they were showing how it works is, hey, here's Halo running on a cell phone with a gamepad attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, the whole premise of this, you know, this streaming service is, hey, you can play Xbox games without needing to own an Xbox.
Right.
So, like, what's the difference between you need a phone to do it or you need a rival console to do it?
Yeah, and you know, this doesn't just relate to like the cloud gaming or Rare. I mean, Minecraft has been a major component of the Xbox Studios family for years. And I know many out there probably viewed Minecraft as this big exception that they were making. You know, like, it doesn't apply to the console wars because Xbox acquired it midstream after it was already, you know, it exploded in popularity. And so, of course, they're not going to stop putting it on Nintendo or PlayStation or whatever.
I do think maybe it was like a wedge in the door to get them thinking about, like, well, a thing we own can be super profitable without it being exclusive to our hardware.
Sure, sure. I just think it's silly that you can, like, make these exceptions in your mind and say, yeah, but they would never do it for anything else. Because it's, like, I think since Phil Spencer took over, they have shown this willingness to work with other studios. Like, how do you survive as this other brand, right? Because PlayStation, Sony, they're the market leaders. Nintendo's the niche product for hardcore gamers. What does Xbox bring to the table other than this, you know, amassing this huge collective of studios that they've bought over the years and being the bridge between the two of them, Nintendo and Sony, actually gives them their own unique footing, weirdly enough.
The Series X is the one most bridge shape.
What I'm trying to say is, I don't know, do the people who live and breathe Rare and the Donkey Kong universe, are we somehow more informed than the vast teeming masses of people shouting at each other online? Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And that includes you, dear listener of the conversation. Thank you. thank you for being so well informed. No, I don't know, like, we have been reading the tea leaves of this. I feel like 2018 is when I first really started thinking about Xbox and Nintendo working together in any great capacity. And it quickly came to pass with things like Smash, Banjo and Kazooie, and Minecraft Steve, both in Smash Brothers. And from there, we've only seen that relationship blossom. And anyway, so like, none of this was surprising to me. And I'm just kind of bemused at this point. Now that we're past the majority of the drama and the console fans shouting at each other and all of the ugliness, I'm just like, wow, everybody got stressed out over nothing, right? So what does late January and early to mid-February also mean for rumor mongering about video games, Cameron? Generally speaking, that is. Well, traditionally, it's when the incessant brain about the next Nintendo Direct begins really getting deafening. And, you know, broadly speaking, I don't mind brain when it's coming from a donkey. But the irony is that this brain very seldom includes Donkey Kong rumors, because those aren't sexy enough for the ingrained Nintendo Online fandom. You know, despite the fact that there's a multi-million dollar Donkey Kong theme park opening in just a couple of months in Osaka and next year in Orlando. But of course, Donkey Kong is a dead franchise and will never return, and Nintendo doesn't care about it, and Xbox is a dead brand as well. But it was soon clear that the traditional February Nintendo Direct was not going to happen this year, because the likelihood is that the Switch 2, or whatever it will actually be called, I'm partial to Super Switch, will be announced off schedule in just a couple of months, somewhere relatively soon. So instead of the February Direct, we got a partner showcase Nintendo Direct, which meant third-party games and no titles that the vast majority of Nintendo fans shiv each other over. So that meant no chance of new Donkey Kong game announcements, naturally. But I did tune in on February 21st, very early, 9 a.m. Eastern is when this went live, because I had a hunch that third-party announcements could very well entail Rare games on NSO. I didn't know for sure, and I thought it was a lark, but all the same, this is my job now, so I felt like I was obligated to tune in rather than be caught unaware, surprised. And since it wasn't a live stream Nintendo Direct for once, just an uploaded video, it meant I could scroll ahead. All I did was, I just scrolled ahead. I was on the hunt for any familiar iconography that I could find. And I saw it. I saw it towards the very end of the video. The beacon of my childhood. That lovely golden Rareware logo. And I went, and I skipped ahead. Which meant that I got the news out while everyone else was either still asleep, not paying attention because it was the partner showcase, and, you know, it wouldn't have Metroid Prime 4 or whatever, or they were just starting the video and watching it chronologically like good citizens. So it felt nice. It felt nice to spoil it for everyone and be like, Rare has got 5 more classic games coming to Nintendo Switch Online. And this was unique, right? Because it wasn't just, here's what's coming to NSO, and it just so happens to include Rare games. This whole little trailer was all about Rare, because it was 5 Rare games, and that was it. And so it was themed around Rare, which felt hugely vindicating as a Rare fan who became a Rare fan on Nintendo and had their heart broken when that relationship ended in 2002. And so for the first time ever, we got 2 Rare games from the NES era, 2 Microsoft-owned Rare games for the Super Nintendo, i.e. not Donkey Kong Country, and another Rare title from the Nintendo 64. Now, the 5 games were Snake Rattle and Roll, RC Pro-Am, Battletoads in Battle Maniacs, the SNES port of Killer Instinct, and Blast Corps. And Cameron, if you don't know, Blast Corps is why you're on this episode.
Yeah, I've got some affinity for Blast Corps.
Yeah, and Blast Corps is one of these things where I have just the vaguest nostalgia for it because it's a Rare game. It's an early Rare game on the Nintendo 64. It's a game I've never really been able to get into for whatever reason, be it like the lack of Diddy Kong or Banjo or Conker, or just the fact that I don't know. It just never gelled with me. I'm really eager to play it now that it's on NSO, because I can just play it from the comfort of my Switch in handheld mode, and maybe it will finally click with me. But it was a trip watching this trailer, because hearing Robin Beanland's Killer Instinct theme playing on a Nintendo Direct 2024... I mentioned this on social media later that day, but Killer Instinct, that was so married to the Nintendo identity, at the very least the Western Nintendo identity, in the mid-1990s. It was a huge component of what Nintendo of America was really pushing at that time. There's this sweet spot in history, in Nintendo history, you know, adjacent to Donkey Kong Country Mania and going into the early years of the Nintendo 64. I would say right before Pokemon came in and sort of upended everything. Killer Instinct was a pillar of Nintendo. Like, Fulgur and Spinal were more representative of the company in the West than Pocket Monsters were. You know? And there's that famous scene of Nintendo of America where they used to have little statues. Well, not little statues, like life-size statues of various characters from that era. And Fulgur is just there right next to Dixie and Diddy and Donkey and Mario and Yoshi. And it's just the weirdest thing.
It is such a strange display. Like, even if you took Fulgur out of that display, it is bizarre.
It is. It really is. But I think it seems even weirder now because for those who weren't around during that time or who weren't like paying attention to Nintendo of America at that time, it just seems like, what? What is this like killer robot doing here? It's like, no, he was a big Nintendo mascot for a spell from like 94 to 97. You know, like,
you could order a Fulgur mask from the Nintendo's Power Supplies catalog. They had like dancers at E3 promoting Killer Instinct for the Super Nintendo. It was, they were treating it as a big deal.
Yeah. I mean, as a Donkey Kong Country diehard, I was always a little bit, you know, in the tribalism one engages with as a kid who's really into something. I viewed Killer Instinct as a rival to Donkey Kong Country, even though it was both from Rare, but that was the thing. I was like, why are they treating Killer Instinct like a bigger deal than Donkey Kong Country in this one particular instance? Oh, I can't have this. Of course, I love both, and I, you know, nowadays, I mean, I'm still terrible at Killer Instinct, but I, you know, it's just silly to, like, Rare was such a sprawling, massive output machine in the 90s that Rare fandom could be divided into fiefdoms, like, arguing with each other. Oh, you like Killer Instinct. Well, I like the platformers. And these gun-toters over here on RareNet, they like GoldenEye and Perfect Dark. Arr! And nowadays, that just seems so quaint. But so these five games, fairly sizable deal as far as game preservation goes, as making games readily available in a legal sense. Because of this lot, only three of the five are in Rare Replay. Battletoads and Battle Maniacs was not included in Rare Replay, nor was the Super Nintendo version of Killer Instinct. In fact, I believe this is the first time you can legally obtain the Super Nintendo version of Killer Instinct since the days of the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, and I always love when things like this hit NSO, where it's a version of a popular game that is not necessarily the best version.
Yeah.
Like, quote-unquote, or like a consensus agrees to be the best version, but has unique merits all its own. Because, yeah, I like just from the historical preservation perspective of giving people that option of, yeah, it's out there if you want it. Go ahead.
Yeah. But because the go-to version for classic Killer Instinct for the longest time now has just been the arcade versions. And Killer Instinct Gold, which was the Nintendo 64's reformulated version of Killer Instinct 2, that was included in Rare Replay, which felt really cool at the time. Like, whoa, Killer Instinct Gold? Really? That's awesome. Because, like you just said, I too like when inferior ports are made available because they were just as much a part of Killer Instinct's identity in the 90s. That's how people readily played them once they were available. Like, if you didn't want to huff it to the arcade, if you did not have an arcade in your local mall or somewhere in your town. Yeah, this is how you play Killer Instinct. I was never an arcade kid. Like, if I saw an arcade, I would stroll in there, but it wasn't like you see on TV, you know, like contemporary things from the 80s and 90s where kids are just hanging out at the arcade all Saturday long. Like, that was never me, you know? So, like, I was a home console gamer. And so, even though this is still, like, rough and ready version of Killer Instinct, this is the one I have the most nostalgia for. So, I'm terrible at it. I am. I'm not any good at it, but it's just wonderful to be able to play it again, to see it in action again on a contemporary home console.
Yeah, and having ease of access to both this and ports of the arcade version on Xbox, and I'll give the caveat that the arcade versions on Xbox are currently delisted at the moment, and we don't know when or if they'll be coming back. But it's fun that we now have this point of comparison to look between the two easily. And, like, I have this newfound appreciation for Super Nintendo Killer Instinct because I can see, okay, this isn't a one-to-one arcade conversion, but, like, it's amazing where they managed to get really close in places and where they found compromises to make things really work regardless, like the backgrounds and... Yeah. Like the soundscape, I think it's a testament to how well managed the sound of Killer Instinct Super Nintendo is that myself on the first watch of the trailer, and I saw like many people still had this misconception even after the trailer finished and like went to post about it online. That trailer for Rare's games on NSO begins with the 3D Rare logo from Blast Corps.
Yeah.
And the title track from Killer Instinct. So immediately my brain is construing, oh, wow, they're bringing KI Gold to to NSO.
Right.
Because it didn't even enter my mind that, oh, I'm listening to Super Nintendo sounds.
Yeah.
Because the samples are just so well put together.
I mean, yeah, it's a great showcase for Robin Beanland's work on a Super Nintendo, you know, and it's really a technical achievement on par with Donkey Kong Country that they got this game. You know, the arcade version was promoted on the arcade machine as coming soon to Nintendo Ultra 64. And ultimately, that was delayed, so they just brought it to Super Nintendo. The fact that they were able to do that at all is astounding, just as astounding as Donkey Kong Country was.
Speaking of Killer Instinct composers, kind of a banner day for Graham Norgate's back catalog.
Yeah, yeah. So we also got Blast Corps for the N64. While Blast Corps was included in Rare Replay, just like we got the N64 version of Banjo-Kazooie, finally legally available once again on NSO Plus Expansion Pack, so too is this the true unedited N64 Blast Corps, because it includes Graham Norgate's repurposed Donkey Kong Land music in Blast Corps, which was removed from Rare Replay.
It's honestly something I'm surprised was even, like, caught and consciously removed in the Rare Replay version of Blast Corps, because, yes, it is a song that Nintendo owns the original composition for, but who knows, who has Donkey Kong Land enough on their brain to consciously recognize, like, oh, this is a, like, bluegrass-style version of the boss theme from Donkey Kong Land.
Yeah, the only people who would know that are the people who host this show and the people who listen to it. That's it. It's a very, very limited sphere.
Yeah, we're the sample size that tells them people might notice.
Yeah, yeah. we're the ones who make people nervous when we point out, oh, I can't believe they left that in Rare Replay. Oh, it's just like, no, Nintendo's not supposed to see that. Shut up! It's just great, though. I love because compromises have to be made when you bring vintage Nintendo games to Xbox, because so much of the Rare Nintendo partnership was just, they were so intertwined. They were so closely aligned that I don't think either party was ever thinking about, well, what happens if we split up, you know? What happens to, like, game preservation? And game preservation wasn't even thought of back in those days, right? It was just like, you have a new console, you release new games for it. Maybe you have a compilation, like Super Mario All-Stars, where you're just, like, effectively remaking it, right?
It's why there are so many sad stories nowadays of, like, hey, why hasn't this been re-released? It's, well, we lost the original code.
Yeah. So, I'm pleased. I'm very pleased. Even though Blast Corps isn't my favorite, and it's always, like Jet Force Gemini, it's always been something I kind of struggled with, I'm never going to be upset having a Rare game available on Nintendo. And we now have more Rare games available on Nintendo Switch than possibly any other Nintendo system ever. I haven't really run those numbers, so I could be incorrect, but when you combine these five with the ones already released and the Donkey Kong Country games, it's probably a contender. The only one I could think that might come close would be the NES, because of how prolific Rare was as a third-party studio back then, but I don't know. We're definitely getting there for sure.
It was a huge feather in the cap of the, like, the new 3DS that you could play every Donkey Kong Country and Land released up to that point.
Yeah.
Except Tropical Freeze.
We still can't play Donkey Kong Land.
But the Rare owned titles on NSO now make up the difference for Donkey Kong Land.
Yeah. So what this also did, these five games, I feel it also finally ended the discourse, the weird pipe dream. And maybe it's not a weird pipe dream. I understand where this is coming from. But the people who want Rare Replay on Nintendo Switch, I'm not saying like that's weird in and of itself, because again, I get it. I understand it. But I feel like it's like people who thought Sea of Thieves could come to Nintendo Switch, because how Rare Replay works, it just would not work on a Nintendo Switch. So much of it is built on the Xbox infrastructure. Like, everything in Rare Replay after the Xbox era, like into the Xbox 360, those are actually separate games that Rare Replay is just pulling up for you. If you ever try to install Rare Replay on an Xbox, you will know, oh, okay. So, like, the XBLA versions of Banjo-Kazooie and 2E, and then Perfect Dark Zero and the Viva Pinatas, and even Jetpack, the new Jetpack, you know, they're all separate games that Rare Replay just uses, like, it's a central hub for. I never understood how Rare Replay would actually port over one-to-one on Nintendo Switch. And of course, then you get people who are like, well, we don't want the exact version of Rare Replay. We want our own version of Rare Replay that has, like, all the Donkey Kong games. And
like, as I said in the DK Vine Inner Circle when this came up, if, you know, if your answer to being told why Rare Replay on Switch isn't going to happen is, you know, but I don't care about those Xbox 360 games, then, yeah, congratulations. You just described why it's never going to happen.
Yeah.
Because if you have to make a fundamentally different game, then it's no longer Rare Replay.
No, it's
on Switch.
It's Rare Replay Nintendo version, and why would they develop the resources?
They have, like, if you just want to use it as a vector to play Rare games that were released for Nintendo systems, they have the infrastructure for that with NSO.
Yes.
For everything but Star Fox Adventures, I suppose.
Yes. And of course, then people will take a stand, well, that's a subscription-based service, and I don't want that. And it's just like, okay, we could find things to critique and complain about all night long.
Right, like at some point, it becomes less about you wanting a version of this game to exist on the Switch, and more, you don't want to engage with what methods are already available to play these games.
Yeah, like, at this point, look at this bounty of stuff we are getting on NSO. If you don't want to subscribe to NSO, that's fine, but how cool is this that we're even having this level of collaboration? The fact that on a Nintendo Direct, albeit a partner showcase, We had a whole damn trailer for Rare games in 2024. Like, holy crap! If you would have told me this back in 2002 when I felt at my most gut-punched over the buyout, you know, I don't think I could have believed it. Like, the slow walk it took to get here from that divorce. Yeah, it's astounding. It's terrific. I'm not going to complain about any of this because I would have desperately wanted this, like, back in 2003, 2004, 2005, you know, when it seemed like they would forever be kept at arm's length. So, yeah. Anyway, Rare Replay's not happening on Nintendo, but we are getting the next best thing, or potentially even a better thing, because, like I said, some of these games weren't even in Rare Replay, so, you know, you're getting stuff that even the Xbox audience hasn't gotten. So, everybody just chill out and see what happens. Now, obviously, we had 5 new Rare games on NSO, but the big asterisk next to that, especially for our community and our website, none of them are DKU Rare games. Like, with all due respect to the likes of Blastcore, which has its fans, you included, and I hope to be among them eventually, it's not the big get that I think a lot of people, beyond just us, are thirsting for. Because there is one game in particular that can only be possible with an arrangement like NSO. One game that could be brought back under these unique circumstances. Diddy Kong Racing. Because we've got that game. We've got the N64 version of Banjo-Tooie. Which, you know, again, Banjo-Kazooie on NSO feels incomplete without Tooie. And there's Donkey Kong 64, obviously, which is a slightly different scenario, given that it is a Nintendo-owned game with Rare trademarks strewn in. And then there's even Conker's Bad Fur Day, which I wouldn't have thought to be in the discussion at all, but it kind of is on the table a little bit now, even if it's just kind of like on the very edge of the table, teetering perpetually, given that they have like updated the like mature rating, whatchamacallit, for Nintendo Switch Online. At the very least, they've made it possible for more adult games to be on the service, which would have been the biggest hang up for Bad Fur Day.
It feels really like telling that they dumped these 5 games all at once, rather than, like, drip-feeding as they usually do with NSO announcements. I kind of feel like this is akin, like, this is wishful thinking, but I feel like it's very reasonable wishful thinking. I feel like this is, like, we're, like, a puzzle is being built, and, like, they've started with the border pieces, and the border is complete, and we're like, well, something's gonna go in the center here.
Yeah. And look, maybe someone at Nintendo just really loves Blastcore. I don't know. I know you remember this, Cameron. I don't know if everybody listening to this will remember this. Towards the end of 2020, there's a lot going on that year, so I understand if this fell down the memory hole. Remember when both Banjo-Kazooie and Blastcore appeared on an errant listing for the Wii U Virtual Console?
Sure do.
Yeah, so What happened was there was this list of upcoming games. I think it was the Nintendo of Japan website. And it's for the Wii U. It said on December 30th, Banjo-Kazooie and Blastcore would both be coming to the Wii U Virtual Console. This was in 2020. And the publisher was listed as Microsoft Japan. So the theory, this is what I posited back when this happened and I did a news story on it, was that they made a deal with Rare, Microsoft, way back when the Wii U was still the current Nintendo console. Maybe when Rare Replay rights were being negotiated, I don't know, but they made a deal with Rare, Microsoft to get these two games on the Wii U Virtual Console and then did nothing with it, probably because the Wii U was already being abandoned behind the scenes at that point.
Like, you don't need an answer for why something that looked like it was coming to Wii U didn't come to Wii U.
Right.
In 2020.
Yeah, well, in 2015, even, they were already pulling up stakes on the Wii U. They internally listed both games with a far-off date, December 30th, 2020, and then promptly forgot about them because, you know, the Wii U died, the Switch was released. They just forgot about it. And then the actual date was finally hit, and then oopsie doodles. It says on our website that Banjo-Kazooie and Blast Corps are coming to the Wii U. Gotta delete those.
Yeah, it really feels like they were just in a database and somebody forgot to, like, flag do not publish.
Which happens. It happens from time. It's human error. But I stand by this theory. And I think Nintendo was definitely horny for both games way back in 2015 and said, yeah, why Blast Corps? I don't know. Banjo-Kazooie's an obvious one, but Blast Corps, I don't know. Maybe it was just because of its place in the early N64 library. And they're like, yeah, let's get Blast Corps. But now, in 2024, you've got a far more robust relationship between Nintendo and Rare. And Xbox is just willing to play ball hard with Nintendo and everyone else, apparently. So I think not putting Diddy Kong Racing and or Banjo-Tooie on NSO would be the biggest missed opportunity since they didn't put Virtual Boy titles on the 3DS. And I understand why Nintendo was hesitant to do it in the era of the 3DS. Because, oh, Virtual Boy was our biggest failure. The shame. The shame. We can never bring it to the surface. Even though you have a new handheld console that's all about the 3D effect, it would be the perfect time to dust those off and show the greater public, hey, Virtual Boy Wario Land is a stellar platformer. Hey, you know, Galactic Pinball, terrific pinball game, maybe the best pinball game Nintendo's ever done.
Hey, you can play a bunch of first-party Nintendo titles that aren't available anywhere else and in the best form factor to play them in. On a handheld that we launched in red and black.
I got the red and black 3DS because I was like, oh boy, I'm ready. I'm ready for when Virtual Boy comes, and I never did. We were talking with Jeff when the news that this fan emulator for the Virtual Boy for the 3DS had been tweaked and perfected, and it was a story a week or two ago, and we had this discussion with Jeff, and Jeff had this great point where he said, if you told people that there were like a dozen first party Nintendo games from the mid 1990s that were being kept from you, that you could not play, and it was Nintendo's decision, there would be panic in the streets. There would be people smashing storefronts, you know, in complete rage over this notion. But then you build up this myth that, hey, there's nothing good about the Virtual Boy, and then people just believe it and they're content with it. It's just a fairy tale people tell themselves to placate not being able to play these games, when the truth is there were quite a few good Virtual Boy games, and yeah, so it's a shame. I have more to say about the Virtual Boy that's probably off topic, but I've made it no secret my admiration and affection for that damned machine. I'm one of its actual defenders because I think the games are stellar,
and I've seen a decent amount of anecdotes from people trying Virtual Boy games for the first time now that this sort of backdoor way exists to play them with the 3DS, and coming away with the thought that, yeah, these are actually really solid.
Yeah. But yes, it would be a staggering yet classic Nintendo decision if we did not get Diddy Kong Racing on NSO. But I want to come back to this discussion in just a bit, Cameron, because I do believe Nintendo has actually publicly hinted that more Rare games are coming. and I will explain what I mean towards the end of this episode. But either way, I'm feeling confident. I'm feeling very confident that this is not the end. That we got this massive dump of Rare games, but this doesn't mean it's the end of the Rare games we're going to get on NSO. Because I also believe NSO is going to continue on the next Nintendo console. I don't believe there's going to be this hard division between the Switch and whatever's next. It's going to be more of like the Microsoft style continuous, you know, we're just rolling into the next generation of hardware, but it doesn't invalidate our current infrastructure. It doesn't invalidate anything we've done for the Nintendo Switch. So I think this is not even towards the end of the story. I think we're just at the halfway point, really. And if you don't believe me, I will make my case in just a bit.
I guess I should also mention, as just a funny side note to all of this, was speaking of games that Nintendo quote-unquote won't let you play, the Japanese version of this Nintendo Direct did not contain this this celebratory Rare on NSO video presentation. Roughly in its place in the runtime was promoting the addition of Mother 3 to the Game Boy Advance NSO app.
Yeah.
And there was much discourse about that, but to me at this point, I was just so amused thinking the bread and circuses for not getting Mother 3 in North America was 5 Rare games.
Yeah. I love the Japanese Rare fandom who, you know, I have... For all of the ill that social media has brought to the world, one of the wonderful things it has connected fans across language barriers, across countries. We would otherwise be in our own silos, but it's let us reach out to each other to discover each other. And that one of the great gifts it has given us is been to allow the Japanese Rare fandom to touch base with the Western Rare fandom. And I love seeing their perspective on things. And there was this one post on social media that basically showed it was kind of them very, very self-deprecating, showing the reaction between the people watching this partner showcase in Japan, and they were all celebrating over Mother 3. And then it was showing the American side, and they were all celebrating over Rare games, kind of like this wistful, oh, my people are over there. But yeah, it is. I mean, I think it's kind of ludicrous they have not put Mother 3 out in the West. But you know, there are so as much as we're hand wringing over where's Diddy Kong Racing, the poor Earthbound fandom, they've had it far rougher for far longer. So I am not going to try to turn this into who is the biggest martyr in Nintendo fandom, because we would lose every single time. But no sooner did I have all the articles and social media posts about the NSO titles out the door, and I was like, whew, that's done. I can maybe take a breather and start work on, editing this video. Then immediately the other shoe dropped. It was a very busy morning. Sea of Thieves was then announced to be coming to PlayStation 5 on April 30th, along with the other leaked games in the initial rumors. A Hi-Fi Rush is also coming to PlayStation 5, and then Grounded and Pentiment coming to both PlayStation 5 and Nintendo Switch. So, Sea of Thieves will be available on PlayStation 5. And it's also crossplay, mind you, because it's already crossplay on both PC and Steam. So this is really just, it's a big deal for a lot of reasons, especially that it is Rare's first ever game on PlayStation, any PlayStation. And, you know, I remember when Yooka-Laylee came out, the official PlayStation magazine did a cover story on Yooka-Laylee, and part of it was can you believe that this game developed by a lot of former Rare devs in the Rare style is coming to a PlayStation console? And I remember buying this magazine and just feeling so weirded out that that is weird. That is really weird. It doesn't feel right. Not that I'm, like, gatekeeping Ukulele or Playtonic or Rare from PlayStation, but just that you never associate anything to do with Rare or Rare's heritage with the PlayStation brand. And here we are. Sea of Thieves will be coming to PlayStation 5 April 30th. And yeah, so like PlayStation players will be sailing in the same world as Xbox players and vice versa. We don't know any of the fine details yet because there might be something you can toggle in settings, because right now you can choose if you only want to sail with those using an Xbox controller. Like you can opt into, say, I only want to be on a server with people using the Xbox controller, so you can't have, you know, PC gamers just like shooting you in the head willy-nilly, you know. It keeps everyone on equal ground. The precise specifics have yet to be determined publicly.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll just like merge the Xbox controller only setting to also include PlayStation controllers, because I can't imagine it'll be a very, like, I have to imagine it would be a much smaller pool at first if you limited it to only PlayStation players with PlayStation controllers.
I don't really know if it would make that much of a difference. Playing with a controller is playing with a controller. It's not like being a PC gamer that would give you an immediate advantage in aiming.
Right. Like, the Xbox and PlayStation controllers are different, but they aren't different in the way that a keyboard and mouse is, in that somebody can't turn around and no-scope me with a sniper rifle with a PS5 controller with the same precision they can with a keyboard and mouse.
Right, right. So, we don't know any of the, like, finer ins and outs of how crossplay is going to work. But pre-orders for Sea of Thieves on PS5 did go live this past Friday, and you can choose between three different digital bundles. Now, said digital bundles will also be available for the Xbox family, Windows, and Steam this week. But among other things, some of the goodies you get are, for the very first time, you can download the audiobook version of Sea of Thieves' Athena's Fortune instead of just streaming it, which I'm kind of excited about to have, like, ooh, I can keep a hard, not hard copy, but, you know, like, I can make a hard copy of it at the very least. I can have it for my own leisure, for my own preservation. That'll be exciting. If you get the premium edition, you can play the game 5 days earlier on PlayStation 5, starting on April 25th. And there's also, much to the chagrin of completionists who have been playing the game since 2018, and I don't know if there are any completionists who are still so unrealistic about it, because the fact is, you will eventually miss out on a cosmetic. Even if it's just one of these things like a giveaway, a contest, there is something in the game that you do not have access to. Unless you are just completely on the ball and you, like, won the golden banana contest at launch and you just somehow won everything since then, you do not have everything. So, there are pre-order PlayStation exclusives, like these red-themed weapon set, and you also get a bird. A red bird with, like, yellow-edged feathers and a chest, which kind of looks like Kazooie, Cameron. Kind of looks like Kazooie, and part of me is like, I want this bird, because it looks like Kazooie. But it's a PlayStation 5 exclusive. Now, if you also buy the game on PS5, like, I assume you can get this stuff if you log in, like... I don't know the ins and outs of how the crossplay works, but you can connect your Microsoft account, I'm sure. So it's there are ways to get your pirate in there, but pre-ordering will also grant you access to the PlayStation 5 closed beta, which will run from April 12th to the 15th. And logging you in will let you earn your pirate the exclusive Dauntless Adventure title and sales, which are the PlayStation equivalent of the Brave Vanguard title and sales, which you got if you participated in the Xbox, was it the technical alpha, I guess. But like I said, controversial for those Xbox players or even PC or Steam players who were like, oh, you're letting us out. You're excluding us. We're not included. We're not good enough to get these like pre-orders, these exclusives. There's always going to be people who are going to throw a fit about this. And I would have been among them once upon a time. But like I'm telling everyone, I said this in my news article, hey, you know, let PlayStation players have this. Because Xbox players have had 6 years of time-limited cosmetics, of adventures that PlayStation players will never be able to obtain or experience. So, it's fine, you know? Does it really matter if PlayStation players will have an exclusive red blunderbuss? A red and black, by the way, blunder, but Virtual Boy colors, which, again, makes me want this, but I'm trying to... Trying to be good. I'm trying to be rational here.
I'm feeling the pull of the FOMO too, but I also know, like, as a rational adult, like, there are, like, things that I only have because I've been playing on an Xbox for so long, including Xbox-themed cosmetics for playing on a Series X.
Right. And I say this, I try to be so evolved. I try to be like, oh, you know what? I have moved beyond this FOMO. I have moved beyond this spitefulness. And yet, I do admit the darker side of me is already wheeling and dealing with PlayStation 5 owners I know to hook me up. You know, I'm only human. I have my frailties. We will see. We will see if I break. But that being said, I think this is a wonderful thing for Rare. I do, because it is going to open up Sea of Thieves. It is going to open up the player base for Sea of Thieves dramatically. I mean, PlayStation is the number one video game console brand. So this will only lead to longer success for the game, which is already Rare's most successful game ever. And that's on, you know, a console that everyone... got in their heads was dying, like ASAP. But it's already Rare's most successful game ever. Putting it on the most successful console as of right now can only mean good things. And like I said, it will lengthen the future of the game and lead to increased riches and prosperity for Rare and everyone who works for Rare. So as a Rare fan... this is great news. I am pleased.
I think this is only good news for Sea of Thieves being able to expand its audience. And like this goes along with something I was saying in regards to the freak out of, you know, people taking Sea of Thieves going to PlayStation as a sign that like the Xbox brand was in trouble or on its way out. Sea of Thieves has been out since... is it 2018 that it launched?
2018, for Sea of Thieves, yes. It gets a bit clouded because it was announced in 2015, and then there was the technical alpha, which ran for the better part of a year. But yes, 2018, March 20th, 2018 is when it officially launched.
So my point is, if you were going to buy Xbox hardware to play Sea of Thieves, you probably would have done it by now.
Yeah.
If that was going to behoove you to buy a piece of hardware, you probably already bought it by now. This presents the option if you just already have a PlayStation 5, but were, you know, had cursory interest in Sea of Thieves, but didn't want to spring for either a gaming PC or an Xbox. It just now that option is available to you now. You can see what all the fuss is about.
The amount of people I have brought up Sea of Thieves 2 over the years. Because, you know, they found out, like, they heard from somebody, oh, like, you were in a trailer for a video game? Well, it was an E3 thing, but yeah, I got to go to the studio and play this game, and they're like, what's the game? Sea of Thieves. Oh, is that on PlayStation? No, it's Xbox only. Oh, I don't have an Xbox. I've had this discussion, like, six or seven times in my life. So the fact that now PlayStation players will have access to Sea of Thieves, I mean, it is going to widely expand the user base. And also, can I just say, I'm not trying to be spiteful. I'm not trying to invoke tribalism here. This takes a lead pipe to the knees of Skull and Bones, doesn't it? Just a bit. Skull and Bones is a different game. It's not like a Sea of Thieves clone, but Sea of Thieves, not only did it have this long length of time to establish itself before Skull and Bones, but Skull and Bones just launched, multi-platform, pirate game, multiplayer, but all of a sudden now the industry leader of pirate games is coming to PlayStation 5 right after Skull and Bones launches. Ouch. Ouch. Ouchie wears the couchie because they need to rest their bones and skull after that beating. No, I hope for nothing but success for Skull and Bones too. There's room for both. There's room for both.
Yeah, I've always said, there's at least initially it seemed like, okay, they're going for a very different thing from Sea of Thieves that might appeal to people who don't play Sea of Thieves, or play Sea of Thieves but want things from it that they are never going to get. And it's okay if that doesn't appeal to me because I've got Sea of Thieves. So I don't take any joy in watching Skull and Bones struggle, because I could have seen it meaning a lot to people who aren't necessarily me.
Exactly. But, if it does struggle, at least it will save the lives of immeasurable digital hippos, which I think we can agree is a good thing. All right, we have some calls to take. We'll see how many of them invoke the name of Diddy Kong Racing or Banjo-Tooie, but we'll take the calls, and then I will explain my rationale for why I think Nintendo has more Rare games coming up on NSO, and what we think the future might entail for Rare as they take their biggest game ever multi-platform. Let's go ahead and take the first call.
Hi, Frieza here. Do you think we'll see the Rare Cow on any of the modern systems like the Switch? And if so, which games do you think it will be? That's it.
As soon as I heard Freezer's voice, I knew it was going to relate to the Rare Cow. So, can't say I'm surprised there. So here's the thing about the Rare Cow. The Rare Cow is a unique calling card, for those who don't know, is a unique calling card of Rare's handheld team. They would hide this little Easter egg in a lot of their games of the Game Boy Color era up until the, I think it's Mr. Pants was the last one to utilize the Rare Cow. So up until the Game Boy Advance, but not every GBA Rare game has the Rare Cow. The handheld games of Rare from, I would say, Donkey Kong Land up through both Diddy Kong Racing DS and Viva Pinata Pocket Paradise, they mean so much to me personally. Not all of them are equal in my esteem, but I would not be as big of a Rare fan if it wasn't for those games. Donkey Kong Land, 1995. Paul Makachek's madness, that is what made me even more of a hardcore Donkey Kong zealot than Donkey Kong Country already made me, because it expanded the world. It really got me thinking about how this world works and, took us to new locations. It called back to the arcade era and explained, hey, the arcade games took place over here, and here's context for how it all makes sense. And, it was, again, to use the term rough and ready, so it was a little unpolished in places, but I have so much adoration for that game. And it continued throughout Rare's partnership with Nintendo beyond the buyout. We had all these terrific Rare games on the Game Boy Advance, and then we had even, up to the Nintendo DS. And so many of those games just kept the torch lit for my fandom. And, you know, I talked so much about Grunty's Revenge last autumn for its 20th anniversary. We'll be talking about Saber Wolf GBA, a game I've recently just fallen in love with head over heels. Once we decided, hey, it's DKU, actually. Whoop. I was wrong. But yeah, I mean, I think I'm right up there with the people who want to see those games on NSO just as badly as we do some of the remaining heavy hitting N64 games, right? I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know how feasible it is. Unfortunately, it feels like those games have more working towards them than other games do, given that many of them are published by THQ. They're not very well known. Like, there's always going to be a demand for anything starring Diddy Kong or for a, like, mainline Banjo-Kazooie sequel. I don't think the masses are protesting to get Grunty's Revenge or It's Mr. Pants on NSO. And I want them on NSO because the majority of those are terrific games that have just been undervalued because of the time they came out or because of the limited distribution they received, and promotion for that matter. But yeah, I don't know how the rights shake out given that THQ published them. And I don't know if there's any want or desire on either Nintendo or Rare's part to get them anywhere right now. But we are still going to champion them here at DK Vine for sure. Because you're missing out. If you call yourself a Rare fan and you haven't played any of those games or sought them out, you're missing out. It's just like the Virtual Boy. Just like we were talking about with the Virtual Boy. All these Nintendo fans who just let the Virtual Boy games slide under the radar because it's easier to believe the lie that they're all terrible rather than, you know, have that FOMO and actually, you know, seek them out in some way. I feel like the story of the handheld team's output has also been undervalued just because it's easier to exclude them from your own games library.
I guess to directly answer Freezer's question and kind of go back to what I was saying about appreciating when games are made available on NSO that aren't necessarily like seen as the definitive versions. I think there's a like not impossible shot of getting Donkey Kong Country Game Boy Color. I'd like to see it, and that has a Rare Cow appearance.
It does have a Rare Cow in the ice wall of Slip Slide Ride. You're right, Cameron. I think it is possible. I think, look, I'm not going to sit here and say, well, Nintendo is hoarding all of the remaining big Donkey Kong releases on NSO for like this big Donkey Kong hype cycle. Like, I don't think they're really doing that, but the way it's all lining up, they could certainly do it if they wanted, right? Getting so much of the remaining DK library, be it the Donkey Kong Land games, the remakes of the Donkey Kong Country games for Game Boy Color or Game Boy Advance, Donkey Kong 64, like, Diddy Kong Racing, you know, obviously, you could do a lot with, like, and here's Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong News, Donkey Kong Theme Park, new Donkey Kong game. Every time I think we're going to get a big, they're saving all the Donkey Kong stuff for this big event, I'm wrong, because then they just drip feed it elsewhere.
It seems strange that I'm so much more pessimistic about, like, Rare's handheld titles making it on here than I am Diddy Kong Racing, even though in theory, like, a lot of them would have, like, fewer rights roadblocks. But I think a big part of that for me is just, I feel like there's weirdly a lot more holes in the current catalog for the Game Boy and Game Boy Advance than there is Nintendo's other legacy console libraries on NSO. And that's, like, strictly from first-party Nintendo.
Yeah.
Like, you can't even play the original Donkey Kong Land on NSO, I think. Or, let me double check that.
You can't.
You can't?
No, trust okay. me. Take my word for it.
And isn't that... You're right. I felt the need to double check because isn't that bizarre?
It is bizarre,
Donkey
but...
Super Mario Land?
Super Mario Land isn't on there either. Super Mario Land 2 is, but not Super Mario Land.
Yeah, I meant to say Super Mario Land. I think I accidentally said Donkey Kong Land because I just instinctively put Donkey Kong in front of Land.
No, but you're right. Donkey Kong Land isn't on there. But I was like, that's weird that you're doubting yourself there, Cameron, because you should know Donkey Kong Land isn't because you would have heard it dozens and dozens and dozens of times over if it was. But Super Mario Land, it was weird because I was playing Super Mario All-Stars and I beat Super Mario Brothers 2. And I was like, you know, should I just take a break and play Super Mario Land next? Because that came out next in the West. Should I, like, augment my Super Mario All-Stars playthrough with the Super Mario Land games? So I hopped over to the Game Boy NSO player and I was like, wait, Super Mario Land 1 isn't on this? What?
Super Mario Land 2 is, and I do prefer Mario Land 2 as a game, but I think... the original Super Mario Land occupies such a neat place in history for Mario as a franchise that it is so bizarre not to have it.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're right. Like, I'm more pessimistic about the Game Boy remakes of the Donkey Kong Country games than I am Diddy Kong Racing at this point, which is a weird place to be in given the history. But I just think for whatever reason it is, Nintendo's very slow at rolling out the NSO games. It's staffing or whatever, but it's we're gonna be waiting a while potentially. But they could just say, like, here's all the Donkey Kong games at once because the Donkey Kong Park is opening. We need Donkey Kong content out ASAP. But we'll see. But never give up hope for the Rare Cow Freezer. I'm still hoping for a Rare Cow ship set in Sea of Thieves. I'm hoping for a lot of things in Sea of Thieves, though, if I'm honest. All right, thank you for the call. Let's take our second caller.
Hello, Heil and Cam. This is Banjo-Kazooie-Tooie-2000. I had no idea the hotline was open at any point within the years since Yooka-Laylee has come out to now. I don't know, but anyway, talking explicitly about the multi-platform present of Rare's past and future. I am very interested to see if we get something like a DK64 port to NSO, Conker's Bad Fur Day on NSO, and of course this is wishful thinking, but wouldn't it be nice if we could play Nuts and Bolts on something else other than an Xbox? It would be nice, again, wishful thinking, of course, maybe a port of Grunty's Revenge for the Switch, for the GBA, NSO thing, but there's so many different facets this could go down. Here's the whole thing that maybe we could get a Switch version of Rare Replay, please, with all the Donkey Kong countries and Save a Wolf and all that fun stuff. But anyway, have you ever done it long enough? Maybe they'll cameo. I have no idea. But this is Banjo-Kazooie-Tooie-2000 of the DK Vine Forum. Up, over, under, and out. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, it's nice to hear from you again, Banjo-Kazooie-Tooie-2000. It's been a while, and yes, the hotline has always been open. It wasn't just a Yooka-Laylee hype thing. We did change the number. Chad got the old number in the divorce, so we did change the phone number at one point, but... yep, still open. You can call in anytime for any episode. 1-202-630-VINE. It's 8463. We just said, Rare Replay, not a thing, like, for Switch, but getting all of the, not only, like, legacy titles that they released in partnership with Nintendo or for Nintendo consoles back on Nintendo. Not only that, but I think... there could even be the possibility in this new multi-platform vision that Xbox Studios has that we could see some Rare games that were released for the Xbox platform, some older Rare games, come to things like Nintendo consoles. And I don't know how Nuts and Bolts could work because, I'm thinking things like things that are like tied in towards like unlocking, like, oh, you're reading the XBLA Banjo-Kazooie and Tui data, and then that unlocks Stop and Swap 2 or whatever. Like that whole thing gets a little convoluted in my mind when you're then porting it over to another console. But things like Grab by the Ghoulies, Cameo Elements of Power, I could see those being on a Nintendo console, and I would really like to see the reception those would get on a Nintendo machine, because they were originally developed with the GameCube in mind, and then the buyout happened and they changed gears, and kind of failed to find a huge audience on Xbox. I mean, they, all things considered, you might argue they did all right, but I think the built-in audience for those might have been larger on Nintendo at that time. So to see that happen would kind of be thrilling for me.
Yeah, I'd love for it to happen, but unfortunately where the fear and doubt creeps in is, like, I think a lot of those games might find more of an audience on Nintendo hardware, and therein lies the problem, where... And I don't want to pretend they were, like, huge failures or anything. A lot of these games did fine on Xbox, but they weren't mega successes. And I feel like when numbers get crunched to, you know, expend the effort to port games to other consoles, that's kind of a big factor.
True. But just like I told Nintendo to embrace the Virtual Boy and stop trying to bury it, I'm going to tell Xbox Studios and Rare, hey, embrace Grab by the Ghoulies, damn it. It has its fans. It can have new fans. There's life to be had in this game yet. It just hasn't found its crowd. It's a brilliant game. Put it elsewhere and see what happens. Maybe you'll be surprised.
It found new fans just being in Rare Replay.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. As far as Donkey Kong 64 goes, you know, I will say that I think it's a little harder to emulate, given Rare was always very good about getting the most out of the hardware of its time. I think that, in turn, makes it harder to emulate them. And I think Donkey Kong 64 had a lot of concessions and a lot of things in there to make it run on the hardware that then become askew when you bring it to a modern console. It had this problem with the Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah, DK64 in particular has a lot of problems that are essentially down to the game being built to account for the N64 struggling to run it.
Right. Right. And yeah, so like the question then becomes, does Nintendo view it as worth it? And also, and please don't take this as me leaving little breadcrumbs, like this is me trying to be like the clue master here and trying to like give you like a hint, like, oh, I know so much right now. This is just pure speculation, but judging from what we've heard about what the Donkey Kong game in development was when it was Donkey Kong Freedom, if the Donkey Kong game in development today carries that forward in any way, then it is a 3D Donkey Kong game. And does Nintendo, who I think it's an open secret, many at Nintendo internally loathe Donkey Kong 64, do they really want to put what they consider to be a bad representation of 3D Donkey Kong out readily available if they're getting ready to launch their vision of 3D Donkey Kong? So, like, that could be holding Donkey Kong 64 back too. But again, I don't know anything about that. That's just me speculating. They could there's a lot of love for DK64, obviously, so they could just easily put it on Nintendo Switch Online expansion pack and not worry about it harming the reputation of any potential possible 3D Donkey Kong game in the works.
And I think the biggest point of optimism in DK64's favor is they already re-released it once. In, like,
exactly
a state that had some pretty significant emulation issues, but they put it out regardless.
They put it out, but again, it was...
So, like, they did it once, they'll do it again.
Then again, it was for the Wii U, and it's kind of like if a forest if a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? Did they really put it out if it was for the Wii U? I'm joking. The Wii U had fine library of games. It was just a disaster. Thank you for the call, Banjo-Kazooie 2E2000. And please, call again in the future. It was great to hear your voice again. All right, let's take our last call. And then I'll lay out my theory. I'll lay out my theory about why there's more to come on NSO.
Hey guys, Rick here. I gotta say, the Rare portion of the Direct, that was easily the best part. That Killer Instinct music just gets you going. It's so good. Though I'll fully admit, in my brain, I was like, where's Diddy Kong? Where's Diddy Kong? I was like, there's no way Diddy Kong is not gonna be here. I don't know why my mind was like, I'm waiting for it, here he comes. No Diddy Kong Racing yet. Like, I think we know it. And I'm glad they didn't just throw it in there. I think Diddy Kong Racing is important enough that where it should have its own just momentous, its highlight. It needs its own spotlight. It's, you know, it's that important. But, Killer Instinct, you know, I there's something about it. I wish it could have, it's this thing where it felt so Nintendo, or at least it felt like Nintendo really went together. Nintendo fully embraced it. I wish it could have stayed Nintendo after all these years, and obviously what it went to be was incredible, but it just feels right, it being back on Nintendo. You know, I wish we could have gotten, Killer Instinct character in Smash. It would have happened, you know, definitely, but it was just wasn't meant to be. You know. Anyways, guys, great to hear you guys again. Babies.
Well, Rick, it's always great to hear you too, and welcome to Season 12. Thanks for the call. Rick brought up a great point. Killer Instinct character in Smash. Talk about missed opportunities, given the legacy and history of Nintendo. Now, I say this, if I had to choose Banjo and Kazooie in Smash or a Killer Instinct character in Smash, of course I'm choosing Banjo and Kazooie. Like, 10 times out of 10. No question. But if there is room for more from that history, from that partnership, from that collaboration between Rare and Nintendo. And I realized too, like, they also brought in Minecraft Steve with the deal with Microsoft. So that was definitely a bigger character to put into Smash than Fulgore or Spinal or anybody else at this point. But I'm always the one who, like, views Smash first and foremost as a celebration of Nintendo's history, and I realize it's evolved far beyond that into just video game history. But up until, like, Sonic and Snake got into Brawl, like, it was just this full-on embrace of everything Nintendo. And so I'm the one who's like, yeah, you gotta put Fulgore in there, you gotta put Spinal in there, you gotta put Ken Griffey Jr. in there. Get, like, Captain N, the Game Master, and Nestor from Nintendo Power. I want all of those in there. All these oddballs who used to loom so large in Nintendo history, and yet now are just not part of the conversation.
Yeah, a KI character in Smash is something I would have liked to see and would still like to see. It seems like it's not completely off the table in the future, considering what we got. But I have to say, it's a little funny. It is very tempting with a lot of Rare's franchises to just constantly pontificate the question of what could have been, what might have been if, you know, if Nintendo had bought Rare outright, if, like, things had gone down a different path. I feel like I don't do that as much with Killer Instinct because, to be blunt, I think Killer Instinct 2013 is the best thing to ever happen to Killer Instinct.
Yeah, you know, I'm somebody who's been won over by the charms of Killer Instinct 2013, too, probably because we finally decided it was also DKU, and, you know, by way of the Lord of Games appearing on the back of Rash, but it's a very elegant modernization of Killer Instinct. Well, it retains a lot of the spirit of that mid-90s schlocky kung fu B-movie meets, like, Hammer horror kind of, like, dichotomy that Killer Instinct has going on.
And I think it became a staple of like the modern like fighting game community, and to the extent that it even like reached back and renewed this like appreciation for the legacy of Killer Instinct and this like newfound reverence for like, oh, that this soundtrack was always amazing. This sound design was always iconic. Combo Breaker is just like this culturally persistent meme.
Right.
It'll like Killer Instinct is a big deal again.
It's hard for any fighting game that isn't Street Fighter or Tekken, Virtua Fighter, Mortal Kombat in the West. It's hard for any to really find their niche, have real estate in like, you got the titans of the fighting game world, and then you got like Smash Brothers, which does its own thing, brings in its own audience due to the differing ways it plays. And I can get into Smash Brothers. I am terrible at traditional fighting games with the convoluted button inputs. I can't do it. My fingers and my brain don't work like that. It's basically math. It's math for video games, but not Donkey Kong Jr. math. It's just, I don't get it. It's not fun for me. I like the characters. I like the genre tropes. I like seeing like colorful buff characters just beating the crap out of each other. Absolutely. Because I am always an 8-year-old at heart, and that stuff appeals to me. The Saturday morning, you know, karate fighters, but it's, I can't get into it, but I can get into Smash, and it is impressive to me that Killer Instinct has retained any cultural presence, and it didn't fall down the memory hole like so many other, like, Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat wannabes of the same era. And you're right, it's like Combo Breaker, like, stuff like that. It found its niche and hung on long enough to get that revival with Killer Instinct 2013, and now it does have a place at the table. It's impressive. And yeah, I look at what could have been, and I feel like Rare was too prolific for their own good because they came up with too many winning IPs and series, and then they didn't have the resources to develop sequels for them. You know, they didn't have the people. Like, Rare did so much from, I was going to say 1994, but we'll extend a little bit back to Battletoads. From Battletoads to the end of their partnership with Nintendo, Rare had so many franchises, so many IPs, some that they were developed, like they brought in and adopted effectively, like Donkey Kong, some that they created internally, some that Nintendo had the rights to, some that they had the rights to. And then, you know, it's just going to create demand for sequels to all of those. And eventually, modern game development caught up with them, and they were like, we can't make sequels for all these, so we didn't get a Killer Instinct sequel until 2013. But, yeah, I mean, what could have been? Killer Instinct could have been a contender, had they just been more persistent with it, maybe. I don't know. But its present is secure, and presumably its future as well, since it is, as you said, a staple of the Xbox library now.
And it is a poster child for how, like, Rare delegating their IP to other developers can turn out perfectly fine, because, as you said, they can't possibly keep every plate spinning, certainly not now, and even back in the day, like, Battletoads was effectively benched as soon as Donkey Kong started taking off.
It was. And I remember, like, the rumors of a new Battletoads game. And I know Rare internally, like, bandied about getting a Battletoads game, like, on the Game Boy Color, I think. It was the GBA, but it never happened. And
a very, very basic GBA prototype surfaced. But it seems very apparent that it, like, did not go very far.
Yeah. And we didn't get a full-on Battletoads game. New Battletoads game until the year 2020, which is ridiculous given the cultural presence of Battletoads, either in memes or what have you. Yeah, but, you know, talking about Rare and their multi-platform future, you brought up, you know, Killer Instinct 2013 is a good success story of another studio developing a Rare property with some oversight or input from Rare, and it turning out wonderfully. And I'm thinking about Rare's own games, and also games such as KI 2013. Because, look, I don't know what Sea of Thieves going to PlayStation 5 more than 6 years after its release on Xbox One will mean for a game like Everwild, assuming it ever escapes development hell, or the rumored, and I heavily stress, rumored Banjo-Kazooie game possibly in development somewhere. I don't know if those will be multi-platform from the start. At this point, sure, it's possible. It is, especially if Xbox strategy continues to evolve over time. I don't think I would say with 100% certainty either way, but if, you know, Microsoft looks at the data and they say, hey, you know, a Banjo-Kazooie game, a new Banjo-Kazooie game would sell potentially more copies on the Nintendo Switch 2, the Super Switch, than as a pure exclusive on the Series XS, then sure, they'll do it. I think they're not going to be afraid to make those decisions. Now, I do think it will be available on the Xbox console. So long as we have Xbox consoles, they're never going to say, we're only putting it on Nintendo Switch 2. We're only putting it on PlayStation 5. You're not going to get that, but I do think it's definitely worthy of being a discussion right now. I just wouldn't put all of my hopes on anything like this yet until we see how this strategy evolves. But like I said, I would really like them to crack open some of Rare's older Xbox titles that made me fail to find the audience they deserved. Because what's the harm, aside from maybe the monetary gamble, of putting Grab by the Ghoulies, a game that came out over 20 years ago, on a system like the Nintendo Switch, you know, having available on the eShop, and just seeing how things go. I think that would be pretty cool, but, you know, like you already said, Cameron, is it worth the money? Same thing with the GBA games. Is it worth the money to do it? I don't know. As far as the immediate future of Rare on NSO beyond Pipe Dreams, I am adamant, and maybe I'm just barking at the moon, or in this case, barking at the stars, but I think they alluded to the possibility, or the very real likelihood, that they have, at the very least, 4 more Rare games coming to NSO in the future. Why do I say this? Well, when they did this trailer for all these Rare games, it ended on a Starfield.
The Xbox game?
No, that's not coming to any other console camera. We've established that. Stop rumor mongering. There were 5 V5 games that were announced during the partner showcase and were available that day on NSO. Their original game boxes were formed with starry constellations. So you had like these constellations of the 2 Super Nintendo boxes for Battletoads and Battle Maniacs for Killer Instinct. You had the 2 NES boxes, Snake Rattle and Roll and RC Pro-Am, and you had the N64 box for Blast Corps, all formed from these starry constellations. And I was like, that's a really cool, really involved little bit of special effects for these 5 games on NSO. It's usually more effort than they put in generally for announcing these NSO releases. And I was just staring at it, and I noticed I was picking up on other things in the image, and I brought it over to Photoshop, I enlarged it, and I immediately realized that there were four more constellations hidden in the night sky. Two of them in the shape of NES boxes, and two of them either in the shape of Super Nintendo or N64 boxes. They're roughly the same size and shape, so it's hard to really decide. It's a very subtle thing they've done. And Nintendo doesn't usually do this. They don't usually put clues in things and make us, like, freak out over the mere suggestion. They're usually very upfront about this stuff.
Yeah, I've been through enough of Smash Brothers hype cycles to know not to try and read too many tea leaves.
Yes.
When it comes to Nintendo.
But it's inarguable that they have added these extra constellations, and there's no need for them to be there. It doesn't add anything to the image.
They show up at the very end of the trailer, like, fading in as Available Now pops up. Like, there is no accidental reason to do that.
No.
Like, it is very purposeful.
Some wise ass knew what they were doing, and they were hoping a freak like me would pick up on it. So, of course, like, I made this apparent on social media that day, so I know I was, like, hinting at this, like, oh, stay tuned to the conversation, so I'll reveal it all. Well, I already told you what's happening if you follow me on social media, but like I said, it's such a subtle effect, and like you said, it doesn't show up until the very end. When Available Today comes up on the screen, that's when these fade into view. So they knew what they were doing. It's like Available Today, but ooh, in the future, four more games are coming. The very least, four more games that we've made the deal for. Like, the ink is dry. Now, if I had to guess, if I had a coconut gun to my head, as I like to say, like, of course, I'm going to want to say Diddy Kong Racing, and I'm going to want to say Banjo-Tooie, because those are the two I probably want the most out of Microsoft-owned Rare games at this point in time. The NES games I'm a little iffier on, because it predates Donkey Kong Country, and I just don't personally have as much at stake. But I think it would be strange if we got Battle Maniacs and not the original Battletoads on NSO.
Yeah, one of those teases is definitely a vertical box, and I just don't know what else is left in Rare's NES library that they'd make a hard push for, mm-hmm. other than Battletoads. I mean, you know, it could be like Slalom,
yeah,
but or RC Pro-Am too, but it would be weird to just not have Battletoads but have Battle Maniacs.
Yeah. It would.
Not as weird as having Banjo-Kazooie, but not Tooie, but still weird.
Not as weird as having Super Mario Land 2 and not Super Mario Land, but yes. Like, and also, can I just say, having RC Pro-Am in there does make me think Diddy Kong Racing, just because of how linked the two are, given that Diddy Kong Racing was at one point Pro-Am 64. So, yeah, like, I do think Diddy Kong Racing is on its way, and of course I want to believe that, and I can't honestly say how much of it is just me desperately hoping for Diddy Kong Racing, and how much of it is actually using the intellectual side of my brain rather than the, like, pure emotional response of needing Diddy Kong Racing. But two more N64 boxes, I mean, maybe Super Nintendo, but I doubt, like, Battletoads Double Dragons would be on there.
I also wouldn't discount that the possibility that we get Diddy Kong Racing, but it is not the intent of this trailer to tease it, because, like, you and I both know it is a Rare game in which a Nintendo character has top billing.
Yeah.
I don't think the wider culture sees it that way, so Nintendo may not choose to promote it that way.
Well, yeah. So, for the record, I don't think that they would be hinting at any Nintendo-owned games in this. So, Donkey Kong 64, when I say one of these boxes is in Donkey Kong 64, that's not me saying Donkey Kong 64 won't be coming to NSO, or I don't think it's likely. It's just that, from Nintendo's perspective, Nintendo has the rights to DK64. So even though it's a Rare game, Nintendo views it as a Nintendo game.
The marquee, like, marketing blurb when you put Donkey Kong 64 on your service isn't, look at this cool old Rare game we put on the service. It's look at this notable Donkey Kong game we put on the service.
Exactly, exactly. And you're right about Diddy Kong Racing as well. Like, if they were holding back Diddy Kong Racing for any reason, it's not going to be like, finally, the Rare classic from 1997 is available again. It's going to be this cool-ass game starring Diddy Kong, the Donkey Kong character.
You putting on that voice just made me so glad that this was one of those trailers that did not have the obnoxious-ass narration over it.
It was refreshing, wasn't it? 5 Rare games coming to Nintendo Switch Online?
Yeah. Killer Instinct for Super Nintendo, for Nintendo Switch Online, for the Nintendo Switch family of systems.
Yeah. What's wild to me, though, Cameron, is that, you know, the original vision that the Stampers had way back in 2001, right after Nintendo declined to purchase Rare, and the Stampers were basically like, well, all right, then, we're putting ourselves on the market. At first, they dreamed, or they thought the very real possibility was, that they were going to be developing games for every major console, which at that point was the Nintendo GameCube, which the PlayStation 2, and the original Xbox. And there was a period where it looked like Activision was going to be the one buying Rare. And, you know, all things considered, we dodged a bullet for sure, given, you know, the history of Activision over the next 2 decades.
Yeah, the years have only made that more apparent.
But Activision would have let them continue developing games for Nintendo, for PlayStation 2, and for the Xbox at that point in time. And, you know, ironically now, Activision is also owned by Microsoft, so they're under the same umbrella anyway, but it didn't come with Rare getting absorbed into Activision and then Rare ceasing to exist at some point, because of course that would have happened had Activision gotten their tendrils in them. But yeah, I mean, this was illustrated, literally illustrated in a card designed by Will Overton. It was Rare's 2001 holiday card. They mailed out to the big leagues at the time.
And I should mention, like, Lost to Time is, this was part of like a series of illustrations he did that year. Like,
yes.
He did, it was part of a multi-part one where he did like a drawing of representing Perfect Dark, Saber Wolf. There was one for Star Fox Adventures that they had to cut because they didn't have the rights to it.
Yes.
Rare's holiday card, Rare's like a Xmas card video on YouTube that goes over the whole totality of everything they did and has some very nice images mm-hmm. of the other cards that year.
Yeah.
They're all pretty great. Oh, the cameo as well, very early cameo.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This one in particular, though, is what made the headlines back in 2001, because this was everyone's first true inkling. And we were denial. Baby DK Vine, like, we didn't want to hear this. But this was the first suggestion that Rare was leaving Nintendo, or the relationship with Nintendo was changing. Because you had this, like, a snowy, like, nighttime scene with a decorated pine tree into a Christmas tree, and you had Mr. Pants. This is before It's Mr. Pants. This is right after he, like, a year after he appeared dancing on Boggy's TV, 2 years after the Ants' Pants cheat in Jet Force Gemini. But you had Mr. Pants in a Santa hat putting presents underneath the Christmas tree. And among those presents was clearly a Nintendo GameCube, yes. But what's also clearly an Xbox, and what I think is supposed to be a PlayStation 2. And the card read, Merry Christmas from everyone at Rare. And surprises under every tree. And now, over 22 years, 23 years this year later, the vision of this card is actually coming true. So I guess there's still hope for Donkey Kong Racing yet.
This has been a File 2 production.
Que rico!